Welcome. You are listening to the Better Together podcast with Callie and Rosario Picardo. We take on topics involving marriage, ministry, parenting, communication, relationships, and other subjects that our listeners want to hear more about.
Welcome to part two of Greg Delaney's recovery story and how God is using him in powerful ways. We jump in to part of last week as we finish up and go into part two, and we hope and pray you enjoy it.
If you continue to drink, you're going to die. And I'm like, I don't care. If I don't drink, I'm going to die. That's the way it felt. And so what all of that has now led me to feeling that the call on my life, that again, if you asked me at 14, would you be a pastor ordained, you know, by a guy named Mark Brooks, heavens no, would you do what you do? No, at all. There would be no way to really predict that. But the thing that the call on my life that sits as the center of all of it is that when I was at my sickest, my church didn't know what to do with me. And it was not because they didn't love me. They just didn't know what to do. And I was miserable in the place that I should have been the most comfortable and the most safe and the most cared for. And yet I felt I didn't belong there. That was the first thing. The second thing is I felt under so much oppression from what I felt was the judgment of inside the walls of that church. And those were all my perceptions, not the perceptions that were being heaped on me. Lots of pieces of the story that I could tell you about that. But the Lord really made it clear to me. He said, I want you to help those in the church, to help folks like you to never feel the way you felt. And so how are you going to do that? And it's in this pathway of educating congregations to understanding what we talked about at the beginning, that it's us, it's not us and them. And how do I help that person that is me find the pathway to help? But how do I help the people that are around me to be able to love me differently, to understand me differently, to empathize with me differently, to provide compassion rather than judgment for me differently? Because at the end of the day, that's the baseline. I never want anyone to feel the way I felt when I was sitting in my church. And that has led, you know, to what we kind of do today, both locally and in the other capacities.
Greg, what would you say to Christians listening? And, you know, some are pastors, but the majority of our listeners are just lay people in the pew but addiction touches so many of us that most of us know someone in our life that's dealing with addiction, and many trying to figure out, gosh, what do I do? How do I help? You know, you don't want to enable, you don't want to become codependent. And some listening probably have struggled with that. You know, how do you walk alongside someone that is battling addiction that you love?
I think that, you know, kind of strategically what we talk a lot about is it's really about educating yourself on what this is and what it isn't. And it's a recognition that there's always a why behind someone's whatever. So how do I begin to recognize that there is this story behind the story? Don't judge the book by its cover. And so what I would say to those that are there is continue to be curious and ask questions. There's also a piece of it that learning of what's going on with a person that's dealing with this is very helpful. So when we do education for congregations and educations for lay leaders, it's really important that you understand what addiction is from a biopsychosocial and spiritual, you know, standpoint. There is significant biological evidence that when someone is under the influence of substances, the survival center of their brain is being hijacked. And so we sit there and want to have kind of these conversations of stop it and make a different decision, turn a different way. And while, yes, I have seen people delivered from addiction, Pastor Mark Brooks was delivered from addiction in a dream. So I don't want to discount that. But if it's not advice, but the counsel that I give to those around is learn a little bit about what it is that's going on with the person, and then give yourself some grace. Because if they're in active addiction, you having kind of a rational conversation about, well, don't you see that you're burning up, you know, all of your resources? Don't you see that, you know, you just lost your car? Don't you see that your wife's going to leave or your husband's going to take off if you continue? They're not capable of having that conversation when they're in active use. We call it the hijacker. The hijacker is who's in charge. And so you're talking to someone who firmly and clearly believes that if I stop doing this thing, if I stop using this substance, I'm going to die. And so if you look at the definition of addiction, just based on whether it's National Institute of Health or you know, the Association of Addiction Medicine, they both say continued use despite consequence. So often as people of faith, we are inherently fixers, mm-hmm. right? We like to fix stuff, right? And I think one of the other pieces that I would always say is that because there is a why to that whatever, even though we may not have shared experience or may not have common use of something, doesn't mean that we haven't experienced some of the things that are at the root of where that's gone. We've had pain in our lives. We felt betrayal in our lives. And so the real effort is, how do I come along peer to peer? You know, I don't have the power. I'm coming alongside and not in front, not in the back, and just saying, I want to get to know you with no judgment about what it is that you do, because at the end of the day, folks are still folks. But they are folks who have a behavior, or folks who have embraced a journey. They are folks that are afflicted with an illness. But the core hasn't changed. I'll give you a good example. I have a member of my family right now that's heavily engaged in addiction, and we just had this conversation 2 weeks ago. In fact, I was sitting out in front of Jeff Cartwright's church when we had the conversation, Rob. So, And one of the things I kept telling, because he was sober enough to get this, mm-hmm. is that he was really bemoaning all the things that had fallen apart in his life, mm-hmm. his marriage, he didn't have his call this. And I was like, none of that went away, bro. All of that is still in there.
Yeah.
You've got this thing that has commandeered that away from you. And this is fixable. It's treatable. It's overcomable, right? Let's take the necessary steps to remove that. And then what's in there will continue to come back, and it'll flourish, and we may find a new piece of you that we didn't know because you've gone through this, rather than I can't ever get that back. Mm. And so I think, for going back to your original question, I think it's just a case of those around us being educated about what it is and what it isn't, and then being able to, without enablement, I love what you said there, how do I come alongside with an understanding that it's not my job to fix it? And I encourage people all the time, our role, we are opportunity brokers. We don't have a lack of resource in our community. We don't. We have Mosaics who are really rocking good at this. We have Jeff Cartwrights who are really rocking good at it. We have treatment centers that are really good at it. I want to open up opportunities for you. And while I'm not going to take you there, and I'm not going to, you know, there's certain things I will do and I won't do. Mm-hmm. But when you're there, I will pray for you, and I will point you in the right direction, and we will cheerlead you, and we will pray with you. And as you continue to move along, we're going to be there for when the tough time comes, when the hard questions have to get answered, when the trauma returns, when there's things that happen. Because the tough part is that this, it really takes about 5 years for somebody to really get steady. And for that person that's on day one, my goodness, that's 1600 days from now. How am I going to do that? Mm-hmm. But it's just that it's real simple and cliched. It's one day at a time. So I've talked too long about that, but hopefully you get it. And so that's our call with the work that we try to do, whether it's Recovery Ohio, where I'm headed now, or whatever. There are 300,000 churches in the country, and inside there are people of incredible compassion and amazing gifting. Many professionals who are social workers and physicians and others that got it. And yet sometimes they don't see right in front of them this incredible mission field of folks that all we need to do is give you a little bit of activation and a little bit of permission. Mm-hmm. And we can be the place of safety at the beginning of the journey and the place of connection to go through the journey and the place of help and healing throughout the journey. And that's a big lift for us, because right now, many who are afflicted and many who struggle with this stuff, they don't see us that way. Mm-hmm. Because we haven't educated ourselves and we haven't created that space. So we have a big job to do. But the good news is that it's getting better. It really is getting better. Our numbers aren't better. That's the sad part. But at the end of the tunnel, on both sides, where folks that are in kind of charge of that, when the secular and the sacred, when I started, the gap was huge, right? The problem has pushed it to where secular and sacred are coming closer and closer together every day, because the sacred are seeing, well, there is some science to this. And the scientific are seeing, well, spirituality makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know, when folks at Harvard sit there and say, the fourth most important thing for human flourishing is spirituality, then suddenly all of those really secular folks sit there and go, well, maybe there is something to this spiritual thing. And now we can have a conversation. And in that, then we can address the biopsychosocial spiritual nature of addiction.
Greg, as we prepare to wrap up, tell us real briefly about some of the advocacy work you're doing, because that's really like some important work you're doing there.
Yeah. And so it kind of has two hats. On the advocacy side, it really is continuing to help to inspire faith leaders and churches of their role. And so we want to advocate for the recovery side of things within congregations. But at the same time, it's also advocating for the faith community to have a seat at the table when some of these bigger decisions are made, whether it's at a federal level or at a state level or whatever. And so one thing that we're very blessed with here in Ohio is our governor and most of the staff that's kind of in charge of what happens, you know, resource-wise when it comes to addiction, all very accepting and really willing and wanting faith communities to be a part of it. On the advocacy side, you know, continuing to help local leaders and churches like the one that I mentioned up in Cleveland to better understand what this population is and what they're dealing with and how they can best serve. At the national level, we continue to try to provide toolkits. And really, it sounds silly, but it is permission. It's helping churches and congregations and others see that it's okay from the pulpit to say you're not okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay to, you know, and so what we're, you know, one of the things that's happening in an initiative from Health and Human Services and the Partnership Center is, you know, we'll have an operational guide to come to a place like Mosaic or a church and say, hey, if you have a heart for this mental health thing and you want to help folks that are dealing with mental health crisis, which are often at the core of addiction issues anyway, here's a pathway and here's a platform and here's a toolkit and here's a way you get connected to the resources in your community. Here's how you could co-locate with another provider that's doing that. You know, that was all driven from just having conversation. And then, you know, and because often what we see is that, you know, government and some of those kind of folks, you know, they realize they can only go so far. And when the problems get really big, it's interesting how quickly they say, hey, yeah, we're going to put aside some of this stuff and we'll see if you can help us. Right. And so to be in that position has been, you know, such a unexpected blessing. I never imagined, you know, when I think I told it when I was with the folks, you know, I got a, you know, an email to come to the White House and I thought it was fake. There's no way that I'm going to the White House, right? And yet, you know, I found the team that we've been blessed to work with, both in the Trump administration and now with the Biden administration. Beautiful people. In fact, the gal that we work with, the Dr. Q English, who runs the Partnership Center for Health and Human Services coming to Dayton in June to meet with our faith leaders and to be with us. You know, because at the end of the day, they're just folks. And what I have found is if you're in this space, you're not in this space because you're going to be, you know, you want to make lots of money and become famous. And you're in this space because you really care about the people that are sitting next to you. And that happens whether you're in a pew, whether you're in a pulpit, or whether you got a title, you know, at in a government desk somewhere in a big building. The folks that are in this work, whether it's prevention, intervention, treatment, or recovery, at their core, they really do get that they care about the people that they've been called to serve, even sometimes more than they care about themselves. Mm-hmm. And the servant leadership in this space, you guys, is truly beautiful.
Yeah,
it really is. And you reveal that we're all trying to solve a thing, right? We're trying to solve a problem. And I think that's what the Lord put all of us here to do anyway. But when we can get on the same page and collaboratively see that we're all gifted to solve it in a different way, or as we knit it all together, we're going to solve it in an amazing way, then really creative things happen. God inspires incredible ideas inside people. God takes all this stuff that somebody's been doing for years and suddenly says, I mean, I'll leave you with this. Last night, we're sitting with a gal who was a physical therapist working with veterans, loved her job, felt the tug of the Lord to step away from that job and write a curriculum on wellness and spirituality for women in recovery.
Hmm.
And so she's sitting at a table yesterday at a coffee shop, my wife and her, and I got out of the way because they were talking their own language. That's what they do. And it was just, and just to watch the vibrancy of this person who had heard from the Lord, you know, not to get overly spiritual, Habakkuk 2'd it, or whatever you want to say, Habakkuk 2'd it, the whole thing, wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Lord was opening these doors to allow her in her 50s to now find the passion that had always been there.
Mm-hmm.
And her heart for research, her heart for wellness, her heart to be an advocate for these folks that she's going to encounter. And she's sitting there saying, but I've hit my ceiling. This is what I do. And then for us to be able to come alongside and say, well, now we can put you in front of these people to help add energy and whatnot to what you do. And here's some, you know, and here's the next step. And she's like, that's the part that's beautiful in this. And that's what has really, probably in the last 5 years, guys, it's God orchestrating the body of Christ into coming together to help with this. And I've told a lot of people, 2024, the word is convergence for me. And it really is. Stuff we've been working on for years is coming together into from 2080 vision to 2060 vision. We're probably at 2035 vision right now. And I believe by the time we get to the end of 2024, we'll be at 2020 and we'll have a clear, better understanding of how to be better advocates, better servants, better treatment people, better recovery places, better churches. We'll have a, because the Lord is inspiring all of it. And if we stay out of the way long enough and just do what he tells us to do, it's really going to be slick when we get done, I think. And it's going to be something that's going to finally, I believe, watch the needle go down, and we'll see less people die in a year than we saw the year before, which is the goal at the end of the day. So.
We're praying for that with you, Greg. Thank you for the work you've been doing, and thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Oh, my pleasure. And hopefully I didn't bore you all to death, but
it was,
but I am so, but let me say this. I find, and I told Roz this the other day, what you all are doing at your place is remarkable. And you have you have listened carefully to the Lord and followed exactly what he has asked you to do. And he brings people into your care that will thrive in your care because they have ears to hear the voices that are in your space. Hmm. And it is just such a beautiful thing the other night to be there and to see the genuine love and care and engagement of your crew that are coming. And I am so, first of all, I'm so proud of you for that, but I was so honored to be there, But I think that it's just the beginning for you. You folks are going to, you are such a model of what kingdom work and kingdom recovery looks like. And it's just, I'm just so grateful that you allowed me to share with you today. So thank you for that.
Well, here on the Better Together podcast, we believe we are better together. And Greg, thank you for all you're doing. And I love what you shared there at the end, that it's that convergence when things come together, when people do their part in the body of Christ, just saying yes to God and coming alive to what God has called them to do. That's when we start to see things really move, because it's the Holy Spirit guiding us. So thank you for that encouraging word today. And friends, if this has blessed you, I pray that you will share it with someone else and that you'll just say yes to God. Sit with God for a little while and say, God, what do you have for me in this season? Until next time, remember, we are better together. God bless.